Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Subscribe, hit the bell for notifications. Dan Andros is here to tell us about the Jussie Smollett, I can never say his name, Jussie Smollett of the right. Is Thanksgiving going to suck this year? We'll let you know. We're going to start by doing the sexism of science. It seems like one of those 1940s newsreels. Sexism of science. Yes, you know it's real. And it reminds me of a story. A very deep story. It goes like this. They say I'd hustled, put in the work. They wouldn't shake their heads and question how much of this I deserve. I'm so sick of running as fast as I can, wondering if I'd get there quicker if I was a man. Mm-hmm. It's a poem by Taylor Dengus, also known as Taylor Swift. And if you remember, she wrote a song called The Man. You know, it's very difficult for these billionaire women today. If they were just men, they'd be trillionaires, I'm pretty sure. But their sexism is coming down on them or something that's making them only become billionaires with lives that seemingly every person in the history of humanity would want to live. That is the sort of sexism we're talking about today. And honestly, sexism is a real thing. It's been a real thing, certainly throughout our history at times in certain areas. You wonder, though, have we made any progress in this? I will say, if you look at a lot of academia today, a lot of the media today, what your answer to that will be, of course, is absolutely not. In fact, we've probably gone backwards. It's probably worse than it was at any point in our history. There's the 10th anniversary report for Women in the Workplace, which I'm excited about. I know you are, too. And this is what it says. At the beginning, too few women, especially women of color, are advancing into management positions. And the gains in the C-suite will be nearly impossible to replicate. At the current rate of progress, it will take almost 50 years to reach parity for all women in corporate America. And that assumes companies can find a path to more sustainable gains. C-suite, of course, being, you know, the CEOs, the CFOs, the COOs, all important chief positions. Now, of course, this doesn't take into account anything about who people actually are, the fact that women maybe aren't as locked into trying to get to the C-suite. Maybe they prioritize things that are more important and corporate ladders. But we're supposed to believe the only thing here is sexism. That's the only thing stopping them. Report also shows that companies have put more policies in place to support employees and have increased their efforts to foster inclusion. However, company initiatives to activate employees who have critical roles to play in changing the culture of work have not translated into action. Are you one of those people? Are you one of the people standing in the way of women? You, right there. Is that what you're doing? You're hearing these corporate overlords tell you to treat women fairly, and you're saying, no, I shan't do it. Is that you? Jerk. Likely, as a result, the workplace, again, here's the quote. As a result, the workplace has not gotten better for women. No progress made. In fact, their day-to-day interactions look largely like they did several years ago. All of this against a backdrop of companies' declining commitment to diversity. At a moment when companies should be doubling down on their efforts, there are early signs that they are pulling back. So we should be doubling, tripling, quadrupling down on Ibram Kendi and his teachings. We want to give you more DEI, more CRT, more of all of it. That's what we should be doing. And this, is, of course, has been going on forever. It's permeating every aspect of our media to the point that it's one of those things that everyone just accepts as true, that men are always getting priority over women when it comes to important jobs, especially in the STEM categories. And there's nothing we can do about that. The Pew Research Center has, of course, this headline from a few years ago. Gender discrimination comes in many forms for today's working women. So, what's the truth here? Is this true? Because, I mean, I don't know. I don't see it, really. Like, I see women are, you know, whoever's the best person for the job, the people that I know who do the hiring, they want the best person for the job. That's what you're supposed to do. That's what I think this country was built on, right? Merit, like the merit badge, the little patch that George Washington had. It's about merit. That's the way it's supposed to be, right? Well, there's a new study exploring this, exploring gender bias in six key domains in academic science. An adversarial collaboration is the name of the study. This comes from the everyone's favorite. I know you have a subscription. I don't know if this one showed up yet in your inbox, though. So just if this is a spoiler alert, if you're about to get your Association for Physiological Science in the public interest in the mail, you may want to just like pause this episode and come back to my analysis on this, because I know you're definitely going to be reading this. It's a wonderful study. I will say there's a few pages missing from where I had to pull quotes out of it. But generally speaking, very thorough. They did a good job here. They looked at a lot of studies. Let me get into what the research actually shows. Now, this is the detail of what they were looking to try to figure out. We evaluated the empirical evidence for gender bias in six key contexts in the tenure track academy. These high-level academic jobs, if you will. Tenure track hiring, grant funding, teaching ratings, journal acceptances, salaries, and recommended letters. So not just like, just hey, we're going to get hired, but also all sorts of different things. We chose these six specific contexts because they represent the most active areas of empirical research, because they are especially important early in tenure track career, and because they are specific enough so that gender differences in the outcomes can be measured. All very important. Again, they did a lot of work to set this up the right way. Unlike the situation with broader factors, virtually everyone agrees when they see evidence of these six forms of bias. Yes, okay, we know that. Contrary to the, let me give you a little bit of a spoiler alert here and we'll go through the details. Contrary to the omnipresent claims of sexism in these domains appearing in top journals and in the media, our findings show that tenure track women are at parity with tenure track men in three domains: grant funding, journal acceptances, and recommendation letters, and are advantaged over men in a fourth domain, which is kind of an important one, called hiring. For teaching ratings and salaries, we found evidence of bias against women, although gender gaps in salary were much smaller than often claimed, they were nevertheless concerning. Okay, so let's look at this here, and we'll focus on hiring, because of course that's kind of the most important one, right? Now look, a difference in salary here, which as they point out is very minor, is important, and maybe over time is something we need to look at, but hiring is a big thing, right? Do you get the job or not? You know, I will tell you, your earnings, if you don't get the job, are really bad. They're like $0 per year. So getting the job, the most important hurdle to clear. And here's what they found. Here is the percentage. This is what this shows in a bunch of different categories. The mean percentage of female applicants and how many of them get the job. And I want to focus on those two right here, because it's the easiest one to kind of boil this study down. You can look at all the details when your subscription arrives, of course. But in biology, 26% of the applicants were female. The jobs, well, 34% of those jobs went to females. In chemistry, 18% of the applicants were female, but 29% of the jobs went to women. In civil engineering, 16% of the applicants were female, but 32% actually went to women. That's double the percentage of that actually applied. Electrical engineering, 11% of the applicants were female, 32% of the jobs went to female, three times the percentage. In mathematics, 20% of the applicants were female, 32% of the jobs went to females. And in physics, 12% of the applicants were female, 20% of the jobs went to female. In the study, it summarizes this way, how wide some of this research was. They studied 3,077 applicants for 63 tenure track jobs in 19 scientific fields at large research universities. Again, women's likelihood of being hired were greater than men. Let me show you this chart here that you're looking at. This is applicants. 15.2% of applicants were women, and 27.4% of the hires were women. This again leads you to understand that your likelihood as a female applicant, you're about twice as likely to be hired in these six really important fields. And like, it wasn't just, hey, okay, let's look at who applied and who hired. They also ran experiments about with like fake applications, kind of trying to go through and see at a wider scale what they could find. There's all sorts of evidence. Let me show you another piece of this and I'll give you some of the summaries. But this is the next graph here. You see the red bars and the blue bars, basically red bars being women, blue bars being men. And you see that The percentage of faculty voters that voted for the female candidates, much higher in almost every single category, whether men or women were actually doing the voting, which is kind of fascinating, in areas such as biology, engineering, and psychology. The only one that was actually pretty close was economics. For male economics was pretty close. All the other ones, not even close. Let me give you some of the summaries of as to what all this data means from the actual study so you can understand it, because it's important. We have this. This is all throughout our society. I remember feeling this way about recycling back in the day. I remember thinking, like, I'm not a big environmentalist. I don't care that much about global warming. Frankly, I don't think the global warming situation is something that we should be all that concerned about, and certainly with these solutions being presented. But like something like recycling, right? Recycling, that's obviously beneficial. And then you look at the data on that, and you're like, wait a minute, maybe it's not. Maybe this is kind of a big waste of time, and it's a very expensive thing that just makes us feel good. It doesn't actually do all that much good. I would say that's about as permeating a view as you know, women are discriminated against in the workplace. It's like everybody believes it. Everybody knows it's obviously true. Everybody reports it all the time, and no one bothers to look at the actual data, especially when it comes to these high-level jobs where it's supposed to be the most acute, right? Like, this is the most, we're talking about science jobs. Like, these are scientific areas are supposed to be the, you know, it's STEM, right? We always hear that about STEM when your kids are growing up. You have a daughter, you know this, you've heard it, where they say, gosh, you know, girls don't learn this stuff. They're afraid, they're intimidated at young ages to go into these scientific fields, and then they don't come out the other side. And you did see lower amounts of applicants. Now, again, men and women are different. Men a lot of times are interested in this crap. Right. Like, we like building bridges, and we like, you know, those are the toys we play with when we're younger. It's sports and it's like science and building, where women play with different toys and they wind up growing up in different areas and grow into different people. And at times they might choose to not go into these fields. That's a big part of this. But when they do decide to go in, they're actually getting hired at higher rates. Let me give you some of the summaries here. The authors found a significant pro female advantage. With faculty rating female applicants' competence and hireability significantly higher than identically accomplished male applicants. So they put fake applications in. They say, hey, what are you rating there? Are these people competent or not? They're saying the women appear to be more competent, even though they're exactly the same competence because they are fake people, right? This is what they write in one of the studies. This is from a Carlson study from 2021. We expected our survey experiment to reveal a male advantage. We also expected female candidates to have a lower return to children and stronger CVs than males. Contrary to our main hypothesis, however, our analysis showed that female candidates are perceived as both more competent and hireable compared to equally qualified male candidates. Now, I was bringing up the way a lot of this started, to be perfectly honest with you, is my daughter's a bit of a Swiftie. She loves Taylor Swift. The song The Man came on, and I was just like, you know, do you find it strange that she's a billionaire and she's complaining about how she's so disadvantaged? And, you know, like, my daughter's pretty smart, I have to say. And she said her answer to that was, well, first of all, I think she's speaking for other people. This is a fair point, you know? Like, it doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, she might be thinking about the typical woman who she thinks is disadvantaged and maybe not the billionaire self, which I thought was actually a pretty good point. And secondarily, she said, well, this has happened to me when I was in fifth grade. We were playing football and none of the boys would throw me the ball. It's like, well, that's probably true, honestly, at that age. It's probably accurate. They probably didn't throw her the ball. So I understand that this is where this is coming from, but I'm going to bring all this research home and show it to her because I brought this up. I said there was actually a study that just came out about this, and it's not always true that women are discriminated against. And it shouldn't be, it certainly shouldn't be, when I'm concerned about, it shouldn't be used as an excuse or this pressure that, like, that women or girls feel that is always cracking down on them when it's not really true. You should be able to go out and do these things. And in many ways, it might be easier to get a job in these fields if you are female. So that was shown throughout this entire research. They went through dozens of studies, and they're not all super recent. It's not like, okay, well, this just happened because of the diversity training recently. Some of these go back, 10 and 15 years. Summary, the vast majority of findings indicate that women are less likely than men to apply for these tenure track jobs. But when they do apply, they receive offers at an equal or higher rate than men do. Despite our finding of little bias against women in four of the domains that we existed and a pro-female bias in tenure track hiring, many scholars and advocates appear to believe, state, and write otherwise. Seen in the quotes and committee statements throughout this article, prior to our analysis, many scholars claim that women were unquestionably penalized in all six areas that we examined. And these claims were found in top outlets such as Science and Nature and the New York Times. In support of their beliefs, the authors selectively cited congruent evidence and ignored contrary findings, which they may hold to a higher standard of evidence because of their prior beliefs. And here's the New York Times doing it right here for women in economics. The hostility is out in the open. Studies have found that the field is plagued by singular problem of gender bias, by a singular problem of gender bias. Now, I like economists. I quote their stuff all the time. I'm fascinated by the work that they do. We talk about their work all the time. They definitely have more problems than just gender bias. That I promise you. First of all, look, as a person who is not an economist but plays one on TV, just getting women to talk to you is difficult if you happen to be in the field of economics. Much bigger problem than gender bias. But also, they get a lot of crap wrong. It's a very difficult field, actually, and so it should be understood. But the fact is that we have an entire society built on this idea, this assumption, that women go into these fields, important fields like science, massively high-paying jobs and critical fields that are important to our civilization, and women are being cracked down upon it. We're not getting all the results that we should get because the smart females are not getting the jobs. And the truth is the opposite. The actual opposite is true. Women are actually prioritized to get these jobs at levels far and above how men get them. And look, that isn't necessarily a bad thing or a good thing. I mean, I think the best case scenario is that it's equal. People are considered equally for jobs based on their merit as individuals. And looking at them as broad gender categories doesn't always show you the whole story. It's not always all that valuable, but it does give you a piece of evidence to push back against these narratives that are everywhere. Poor Taylor Swift is worried about her making her billions and billions of dollars. It could be quadrillions of dollars if she just had a different physical makeup. That's the theory that everyone seems to believe. It's also the theory that, by all data, seems to be false at this point. And the fallout of that is not just, hey, well, we got something wrong, no big deal, let's move on. There's this idea that, you know, women shouldn't try these things because they're going to get squashed. There's this idea that girls shouldn't go into these fields if they care about them and are interested in them, because at the end of the day, they're going to get punished for their gender. All this isn't true. It's not true. Nothing in the evidence shows that it is true. Now, there might be a person here or there that suffers from some of this. There might be individuals that go through these situations, and those should be taken on an individual basis. But when you look at it as a societal problem, it doesn't appear to be one. And that is something that should be encouraging to your daughter if she's, you know, listening to Taylor Swift and being convinced that these biases do exist. Of course, they do exist for individuals. By the way, they probably exist both ways. It seems like there's a bias toward hiring women. No one seems to have any problem with that. Us dudes are just like, we just kind of, whatever. We'll do something else. Maybe we'll be Mr. Mom. Maybe that's what we'll do. At the end of the day, it's important for us just to know the facts on it. And regardless to whatever the facts show, you should be able to act as an individual and do things as an individual and be judged fairly as an individual. That is the vision of America. It's what it's supposed to be. We're not supposed to see people in broad racial or gender groups. We're supposed to look past that at the individual and judge people based on, I'm going to coin this phrase right now, the content of their character instead of the color of their skin or whatever gender makeup they might have. Very, very important for people to remember these things, and very, very important that we know the facts. And it would be very important for, I don't know, the New York Times to correct a lot of those stories and come out and say, actually, the assumptions we had for all of these were completely false. But I won't hold my breath for that one. Now, a lot of guys out there eventually hit that moment in their lives where they are saying, you know, things technically, I guess, kind of work, but, you know, maybe the lights come on, but the power output isn't exactly what you your brochure promised. Blue Chew can turn things back up. They connect you with licensed medical providers who can find the right treatment for better performance, better confidence, and the best part, no awkward doctor visits. No pharmacist judging you with a look that says, oh, it's one of those situations. Everything happens online, quick questionnaire, consultation, and if you're approved, it ships discreetly to your door in packaging that gives away nothing, not even a wink. The chewable tablets work fast, they are effective, and they're made right here in the U.S. Blue Chew basically gives you a chance to feel like your younger self again, a version of you that didn't worry about uptime or downtime or unexpected performance drops. We've got a special good deal going on right now with Blue Chew. Anyone in the audience get the first month of Blue Chew for free. Just go to the Blue Chew site, use the promo code STEW at checkout, and pay $5 for shipping. Head to bluechew.com, bluechew.com for details and safety information. It is bluechew.com. The code is STEW.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem. Mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
I'm joined now by Dan Andros, Managing Editor, CBN News, and host of CBN's Quick Start podcast, which you can subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts. Dan, thank you for coming on the show. Happy Thanksgiving.
You too, Stu. Thanks for having me.
Big week. Going to gain a lot of weight this week. Very excited about it. as opposed to other weeks where I would gain that weight at like Taco Bell. Right. I'll do that at home with the family.
It's acceptable this week. Yeah. We're allowed.
Yes. For some reason, it's the gluttony rule, apparently not a thing this particular week. I wanted to get you a few stories from this week, one of which I hadn't followed that closely, but it was fascinating. It is a dramatic story and a fascinating story about an aide to a congressman, a Republican congressman, Jeff Van Drew. The woman's name is Natalie Green.
Yeah. And this is a story that, I mean, this unfolded over the summer in July. And I'm surprised it didn't get more attention at the time, just given the political nature of things. But she was found tied up in zip ties with the words Trump whore written on her. And she was found in a nature preserve, all tied up like this, scars all over her body. Allegedly the victim of some sort of targeted crime, looked like a political hate crime is what they were trying to set this up as far as a motive goes. That's what it looked like, right? You've got the writing on there. You've got her working for, as you mentioned, this New Jersey Republican, Jeff Van Drew, who had been Trump had commented on him. You know, Democrats were calling him a Trump lackey, all these sorts of things. And Trump actually called him out online and said, hey, you know, this guy's brave for standing up. You know, this guy's got guts for standing up. And then here comes one of his aides. Now this Natalie Green woman getting found tied up in zip ties with all of these, you know, scars all over her body and those writings and saying, telling police that she was held, she thinks, at gunpoint. And so that's what was reported at the time. But as the investigation went on, and we're seeing it now, that story really unraveled, Stu.
Yeah, it started to go the wrong way, seemingly when they went to her car, right? Like they started looking around her car.
Yeah, so she's tied up in zip ties. That's how they find her. But they get her car, which is a Maserati. Apparently she's from a wealthy family or something like that. So she's got a really nice car, a Maserati. In the car are the exact same kind of zip ties that she was tied up with.
Uh-oh.
So immediate red flag there. Like, wait a minute. This is awfully convenient. Do you just have zip ties? So apparently as they unfolded, there is just this remarkable. And what's fascinating to me is that this is apparently a Jussie Smollett type situation, right? Like where this looks to have been staged, and just the sheer stupidity of this, Stu, is so mind-blowing in today's day and age. I mean, you got the zip ties, right? Like the zip ties you put on there, you leave another stack of the exact same zip ties in your car. Not only that, she left a digital trail that was so clear, calling the scars all over her body were actual scars, apparently, but she went to a tattoo artist. And not only did she do that, she like texted pictures. Here's the patterns I want. And they're on her phone and she's texting them to this tattoo artist. So as they're investigating, they're going through her phone and they're like, huh. So we got the zip tie thing. Here's you going and paying $500 to a tattoo artist, and you've got pictures of the exact same scar patterns on your phone that you ended up paying for. And I mean, just unbelievable. And there's more on this, but just the scar thing, like you're willing to scar yourself for that.
Yeah, I feel like we need to stop there for a second, Dan, because she goes to a tattoo artist, apparently a tattoo artist that actually does tattoos like this, where they will intentionally make you look like you have scars, but they're actually tattoos. Yeah. I feel like anyone who goes to this tattoo artist and asks for this should immediately be put in prison just out of just like general skepticism about whether they're going to be good members of the community. That's against my libertarian leanings, just a tad. But I guess that's my way of saying it's a weird thing. That's very
It weird. Is a very weird thing. I think they call it like body modification or something like that. Okay. And so she was going into it. But it fascinates me. Then she had a co-conspirator to help her with this, who like there was a big frantic 911 call. Oh no, she's been kidnapped and taken away by three men and said all this stuff. And I'm just wondering, like, how did you think this was going to work? You know, I mean, look, I know we're kind of joking on the stupidity of this story, but clearly this woman has some sort of mental issue here to even concoct the same thing with Jussie Smollett. Like, so I feel bad in that regard. Like there's something tragically wrong in her life that she felt the need to do all this. So praying for her that she gets the help that she needs. But that said, the other kicker's doing this. I'm reading through the details in the story. The clear digital footprints left, going to the tattoo artist. You're paying for it. You're leaving the receipts. The trail just leads screaming to you. She was a law student at a college. And I'm just, what are they teaching in the law school? You know, you just think that maybe you'd catch up a few tips there on, oh, they do investigate my digital background and the Googling thing. She was Googling zip ties near me, like stuff like that.
I mean, you should know at this point in your life as an adult where to buy zip ties. Not like you don't need to Google that.
Right. You're not going to McDonald's to get zip ties, right? Like you get the burgers at McDonald's, you get the zip ties at, you know, Home Depot or Lowe's or something like that.
That's a fascinating story, Dan. I guess my main question here, and I don't know if you have a theory on this, is to what end? Like, what was the purpose of this? Like, why? Like, let's say all this stuff works. Like, the cops are just like, oh, I'm not going to check her phone. Are you going to check her phone? I'm busy. I don't want to check her phone. Ah, yeah, those scars, they kind of look like tattoos, but let's just ignore that. Let's just say all of this worked. They didn't find the zip ties her car. She pulled it off. What is the outcome there? What is it? Just a plea for sympathy? Like, what's the outcome?
I don't know. I mean, they have not released any of her comments on this, so we don't know yet, but I can't, you know, I usually like to try to give people the benefit of the doubt and think of this scenario. You know, Jussie Smollett, like he was at least a famous guy, so you would think like maybe he'd get some added publicity out of his whole thing, right? Yeah. Like there's at least, it's obviously sick and twisted, at least there's a possible motive there. I'm not sure what she thought she was going to get out of this. And not only that, like you do the body modification thing, like you can't scrub that off. Like that's kind of there.
Yeah, they're not temporary tattoos. They're not the kind that you like lick the back of your hand and it, like they stick on and you peel the paper. That's not the
right. I don't know if she thought she was going to be a poster child of like anti-Trump hatred or something like that or TDS, but like Yeah. The media doesn't care about that. Like, they're not, they don't, you're not a sympathy victim in the eyes of the media. You're not going to get any play on this whatsoever. And then the conservative side, like, they don't buy that sort of stuff. We generally are like skeptical on a story like that. Like, yeah, I don't know. It sounds kind of fake.
Yeah. I mean, let's be honest about it. Every single one of these things is fake.
Everyone.
Now, I mean, again, I say every single one knowing that eventually I'll be wrong and one of these things will be real. It is occasionally possible. It's the same way, though, I feel about, like, when, you know, the lesbian waitress who gets the receipt and someone writes on there, like, I don't approve of your lifestyle, zero sense. And it's like, I just be like, every single time it's the waitress just writing it down. And, it's part of our culture, I think, generally, Dan. Like, it's a real problem. I mean, I know some of the details of the story are funny. You point out, obviously, like, she's obviously got some issues going on, and that's sad. But also, like, I think there's this this desire for attention in such a big way. Everyone wants that attention. Everyone wants people talking about them, and maybe their following will go up, and maybe, you know, maybe there's a political motive here. Maybe they were trying to, like, kind of frame the left looking like they're more violent than they actually are, which you don't really need to do. They're doing a good job of doing that themselves.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, it's a sad commentary on where we are, people chasing these, like, awful rewards that really aren't all that rewarding.
Yeah, I think that's 100% true. I mean, the ongoing debate on whether or not social media, the internet, is good or bad for us, it's like, I keep landing on the side of it's bad. It's a net negative. I mean, just so many little, like, there are great things that happen, right? We're connected in ways that we can't imagine. You can help people quicker with GoFundMes and everything else. So those sorts of things are remarkable, but you just look at the net effect it's had on just our day-to-day lives, is people just scrolling on screens. I mean, how many times you go somewhere and there'll be like a group of people sitting around, like, what, you know, maybe you're in a waiting room somewhere getting your car fixed or something, right? And, you know, where you might have struck up a conversation with somebody in the past, like, now everyone's just buried in their phones. Like, people are isolated more than ever, even though we're connected. So it's kind of had like this, the opposite effect of what I think was intended. Yay, we're the most connected society ever. I don't know. I don't think it's any coincidence that anxiety, depression have gone through the roof in the past 20 years as the internet and social media has emerged.
Yeah, and I'll make this my daily plea for you to read the Jonathan Haidt book about this called The Anxious Generation, which really goes through all the stats and the research on it. It's really terrifying. On that note, you might be sitting here on your phone, and you're in the middle of, you're connected to somebody and you're arguing them about politics. Maybe you're arguing them about Israel and Gaza and the genocide going on there. And then Elon Musk flips a switch on his website that says where the accounts are based. I guess in an effort to try to push back against fake accounts, people miss, I guess, identifying where they are, or maybe even just, you know, bots generally. But he releases this X location tool, and it shows that tons of these accounts of people that were claiming to be in Gaza, victims of this genocide, aren't there at all. This is not a surprise in any way.
Yeah, it's really not. And, like, and, you know, and I, again, I always try to give the benefit of the doubt, right? Like, there's like, well, maybe some of these reporters aren't there, their account, maybe their account originated in Poland or something, and maybe they did go there and report on it. I don't know. But it, when there's so many of them, it's like there clearly is an epidemic of fake ones saying I'm in Gaza, and they're just ripping pictures from other places and throwing them up there and concocting a story. And this is rampant. And I think I used to laugh at sort of the allegations that, oh, I mean, remember when, you know, the whole Russia thing, like they influenced the election. It's like, oh, they bought $100,000 in Facebook ads. You know, and everyone's like, well, that's dumb. That's not going to do anything. But what is going on? Like, because you look at a lot of these accounts, particularly these alt-right ones that have come in now, and so many of them are in Turkey, you know, or in the Middle East. And you're like, oh, that's interesting. And I've had people argue with me about, like, anonymity on these social media. I always saying you should actually have to have your name, and it should be, like, front-facing as to who you are. And then I get the counter argument. Well, some people, like, their careers, like, they don't want, you know, to, they want to be able to speak, but then jeopardize that. And so I get that. And again, I don't want to be, you know, some sort of, you know, dictator on this stuff and, like, force people to have to do certain things on social media. But it just seems like you can hide behind these fake identities. And I really wonder how many people in the current discourse that's going on now have been influenced by an account that's actually some guy in like Saudi Arabia or, you know, Qatar or something like that. And it's one of these bot farms that are just like pushing out content to try, you know, propaganda, essentially. And it's working. Like, it seems like as we've turned over this thing with Elon, that that might be the case.
Yeah, it seems to be super, super common. And by the way, some of these accounts, millions of followers. I mean,
people, millions. Yeah,
have been, you know, looking to them for actual information. And that shows how dangerous it is. We don't have time to get into this too much, Dan, but I just want to give this as a kind of a button on what we've been talking about. There's a new study out that finds that TikTok and Instagram causes real brain rot. That's the name of the, that's the headline. 98,299 participants over 71 studies. From that data, they discovered more short form content a person watches, the poorer cognitive performance they had when it comes to attention and inhibitory control, which are skills that can help us stay focused. According to this framework, repeated exposure to highly stimulating, fast-paced content may contribute to habituation, which users that become desensitized to slower, more effortful cognitive tasks, such as reading, problem solving, or deep learning. This is, in some ways, worse than like bad content, bot farms, people lying to you, because you should be able to decipher that, and you know, even though it does have an effect on us. Just the fact that no matter what the content is, you're getting it short form and highly produced and all this craziness is screwing with your brains and probably your kids' brains. You should try to stop it if it's all possible. Last word, Dan.
Yeah, I'll just say, look at how people say, oh, boys, they don't have attention spans. Well, look at how they were studying back in the early 1900s before all the digital ages, before television and everything. They had more cognitive ability and ability to stay focused and read great amounts than they do now. And I think it's exactly what you're pointing to there. The shortcuts, like, you know, that's leading to this lack of attention span, ultimately leading to a lack of critical thinking.
The data on this is so clear at this point. It's overwhelming. Dan Andros, managing editor, CBN News. Be sure to check him out. CBN's Quick Start podcast, which he does not do in short form. It's not 8 seconds clips of the news. It is a like 20-minute podcast. Get you started in the morning. Head over and subscribe today. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the program.
All right. Thanks, Stu.
Es folgt eine wichtige Botschaft Ihres Mobilfunkanbieters.
Ey Mann, es gibt Leute, die drücken immer noch zu viel Knete ab.
Nein, nicht frisch.
Barra ist ja irgendwie smarter.
Ja, smart.
50 Gigabyte für nur 8,99.
Wenig Knete.
Ich zahle doch nicht mehr für weniger.
Nee, das wäre auch schön blöd. Barra, deine Knete, deine Entscheidung.
Nice.
Alle Details zu unseren Tarifen finden Sie unter lebara.de.
Thanksgiving, just a couple days away. Lots of football to watch. There's a Black Friday Eagles game I know everyone's excited about, at least on this side of the desk. That's all coming up as well. And yeah, it's going to be great. I love Thanksgiving. It's a really fun time. It's one of my favorite holidays. And you might say, hey, I see your physical appearance. And I would not be surprised that the one most associated with gluttony is your favorite. And that's a fair point. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I will say getting to where you want to go might be a little bit less fun. Now, we're coming off of the shutdown, so there's all sorts of issues there with air travel. And just getting anywhere is going to be quite an interesting situation. Thanksgiving expected to crush past travel records. Now, the graph they have associated with this article does not necessarily say to me crush. It's up a little bit. If you look at it, I think this is a fascinating graph, actually. What a surprise. I'm interested in the graph. If you go back to 2019, you got maybe like 75 million people traveling. And now it looks like it's going to be more like, I don't know, 80 something, low 80s. It's a little hard to see on the chart, but low 80 million. So again, when you talk about population growth, it's basically at the same levels as 2019. Honestly, might be a little bit behind the 2019 travel numbers when it comes to population growth. But I was looking at the COVID situation here. You see a massive drop off from 2019 to 2020, and you say, okay, that was COVID, wow. But like really, when you look at that, it went from 75 million to, let's say, 58 million. I mean, there was a drop off, but like most people just kind of continued to go where they wanted to go on Thanksgiving. They didn't pay attention to what the government was telling them to do that entire period. And it bounced back almost completely by the next year. So I guess that's one of the good COVID situations that you can look at and say, well, maybe, you know, there was a drop off for sure, but it wasn't as dramatic as at least some of the other major problems we had to deal with when it comes to COVID-19. Okay, gas prices nearing the lowest level in 4 years when it comes to travel, and when we get to Thanksgiving travel. Gas prices close to their lowest level in 4 years, $3.07. Slight uptick from a year ago, so it's not quite the lowest, but it is low. 28 states boast average gas prices below $3. So it is getting lower and lower in many of those. Colorado, New Hampshire, Georgia, some of those. Oklahoma has the lowest gas prices, $2.50 a gallon right now. I don't know if I ever thought I'd see prices that low again. And this is one of the things that I think, you know, Donald Trump should get some credit for. Not really been talked about all that much. His energy policies have really helped when it comes to bringing gas prices down. And that's a good thing. And it's also pushing back against some of the other stuff that we talk about that might be raising prices, like tariffs. And you have things working against each other. You wind up in a situation that's maybe a little bit better than the worst outcomes from some of the bad policies, or you wind up a little bit worse than the best outcomes from the good policies. So we're kind of in the middle there. Not all that surprising. Now, Sean Duffy, he's the guy who's the transportation secretary. Now, I know he's living in the shadow of Pete Buttigieg, which has got to be very, very difficult. But he is talking a lot about air traffic going into this situation. We lost a lot of air traffic controllers, or at least they were suspended. A lot of them are coming back now. And we should be okay as far as air travel. But Sean Duffy did have an interesting suggestion as to how we should be thinking about air travel. Watch.
Civility. Some of you might have noticed that we've launched a civility campaign. And I think it's important as we travel that we think about not just ourselves, not just our families, but we think about those who are around us. And we call our better angels. In a busy time, and again, the airports are going to be packed. TSA lines may be a little longer. And as you might not be able to find a seat as you're by your gate because of the number of flights that are going out or coming in. But I think we have to think about, how do we do a better job? How do we, you know, maintain maybe some of that frustration we have as we travel this Thanksgiving season? Maybe we should say please and thank you to our pilots and to our flight attendants. I think, again, I call this just maybe dressing with some respect. You know, whether it's a pair of jeans and a decent shirt, I would encourage people to maybe dress a little better, which encourages us to maybe behave all a little better. Let's try not to wear slippers and pajamas as we come to the airport. I think that's positive.
A very strange request there. I mean, look, we can all obviously agree we shouldn't be beating the crap at each other out of the airport. I don't know that we need a civility initiative at airports for those reasons. We should treat everybody with respect. That should be just normal. And people do get tense at airports. I get that. I don't know that wearing jeans and a nice shirt necessarily solves that, but maybe it does. You know, I mean, there's always that kind of old school, like, you know, we used to get on planes and we'd dress in suits. That's not where we are anymore. I got to be honest with you. I want the most comfortable thing possible when I get on a plane, because it is the most uncomfortable thing possible. You've got no room to move. You're crammed into between people you don't know. They smell. You know, that's just the reality of the situation. So comfortable clothes is the way I'm going. Sorry about that, Sean. I'm going to have to let you down on that one. I mean, I don't want to dress like a slob, but I do want to be relatively comfortable. Comfort is going to trump the dignity of my flight, I have to admit. Back in a second. Okay, so here's what happened. If you watched the Philadelphia Eagles game the other night, you may be familiar with the concept of Eagles dropping the ball. But I will say, in this particular instance, this situation is a little bit different. It's a woman in Charlotte. She's on her way to work, and something happens. An eagle drops a cat from the sky on her car. The cat then goes through the windshield and then bounces backwards, stopped by the back of the windshield on the back of the car, and the cat bomb from the sky. This really happened to this woman, who I had to be freaking out. I mean, I guess they saw the cat fighting with the eagle in the sky. It got picked up and was trying to get out of that. I will say, sadly but very expectedly, the cat did not make it. Sorry about that. That's my Thanksgiving message to you. I'm so, so sorry. By the way, Black Friday's coming. $40 off Blaze TV subscription. Go to blazetv.com/Jew. Black Friday 40 is the code. Happy Thanksgiving.